All right, here we are.
Here we are. Welcome back.
Oh boy, coming in hot and lyrical.
Well, you were singing beforehand, so
Well, let's not characterize those noises that I were making as singing. I was making, I were making. We were that
you
were
were
being
making,
made, that were
yes.
those mouth noises, they were not mouth trumpet, they were not singing, they were some bad, I don't know. They're just not a thing. We're done talking about that.
Yeah, because this instead is
It is.
science in between.
It is. And this is Scott.
And this is Ollie.
Yep. And there we have it.
Yes. Well, there you go. Hey, catch you next time.
Yeah. Well, we're a little punchy because this is the week before spring break. So, which is a double-edged sword in academia, usually.
You always like situate these in time and place. I always try to like,
You
be
want it to be
evergreen.
Evergreen?
I do.
I don't think it matters. It's the content that is going to make it evergreen. And what we're talking about today is definitely evergreen. So, but yes, I hear you situating it. I mean, we have a New Year's thing. We have a beginning of a new season thing. Like we've got like the year has a rhythm to
sure
it.
Sure it does. Yeah.
So we're just,
We are a little punchy. It is the week before spring break. We both have spring break the same time this year.
Yep. Unusually.
It is unusual. There's part of me that just is like, I just want to get on a plane and go watch some spring training games. But
I think you should do that.
Let's do it.
Okay. I'm not doing it. I got better plans than that.
Oh, man. All right.
We're not talking about vacation plans. So here's what we are talking about today, Ollie.
Drum roll.
Drum roll, please. We are going to talk about practice. I'm talking about practice.
People are shocked. They're shocked.
They are shocked and
you're
awed.
About practice?
What? Well, yeah. I mean, we talk about practice on this show all the time.
A little bit.
But I think one of the things we don't really do is dig into like, well, why do we talk about practice so much? What is this practice idea? And can we really dig deep a little into it? Because I think there's lots of angles why this is important, but the most important angle for us is, we constantly get the question, like, why are these science and engineering practices any different than inquiry, than the scientific method, than all these other ways of characterizing what scientists do? And so I think trying to understand practice as a thing, not the Allen Iverson version, but our version of practice, is I think important to understand why we use that term, why we see it as distinct from other ways of characterizing, and what that requires in terms of how you interpret things like asking scientific questions, right? Which is a science and engineering practice, but also sounds an awful lot like a scientific method description. So I guess I wanted to sort of just have us spend some time talking about, like, what is practice? Why do we use that term? Why is it so important to us? And how is it different than just same old, same old?
Yeah, I think one of the important things for me, I guess a starting point for me, is that the word practice is both noun and verb.
Yes, sir.
And I think that oftentimes when we get talking about practice, we get stuck in the noun that we just are going to list these things as if they're things that students have to know. And what gets lost in that process is that it's a verb that they have to engage with and that they have to practice in order to get better at. So they're not going to be able to do any of the science and engineering practices just by labeling, just by listing them.
Yep.
The only way that they can get better at them is through practice.
Yep.
So that, I think, is the critical starting point for me, is that practice connotes practice, that you have to practice to develop the practice. And in order to become a practitioner, you have to be engaged in the practice with other people who are engaging in the practice.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, I think that's a key thing for me too. And this idea of the other way that this gets framed in a general way by folks is skills. Like, oh, how is this different than science skills? And it's like, well, I mean, for me, skills are very discreet kinds, pieces of practice. Like titration is a skill.
Right.
It's not a practice. And I think for me, whenever I hear the term practice, the thing that is really the distinction for me is I think of it as social practice, right? Mm-hmm. That whenever you say practice, what you're really saying is social practice. And the reason that matters is, as you just said, you're doing these practices with other people, and the practices are constantly being created in the act of engaging in the practice. So what constitutes the kinds of questions and investigations that an individual class is engaged in should be defined and determined and developed through the practice of those people, right? And this is, for me, the fundamental reason why practices don't scale, can't be scripted and replicated. They have to be emergent and responsive. They cannot be a skill. We're going to learn how to design an experiment. That is a skill. It is not a practice. And yes. And that is an important distinction.
And I don't think skills are, neither of us are poo-pooing on skills. Skills are important.
We do not poo-poo on this show.
No, never. But I mean, I think both of us are pro skills. I mean, I think we think that skills are important. It's just that they're pretty far down in the grain size category, right? And yeah. Divorcing a skill from any sorts of context or practice is just meaningless. It's like it's important, right?
Yeah.
It's important for folks to, develop skills, but the only way you're going to be able to apply those skills is through context and understanding the practice in which you're engaging in with other people. And so titration, I mean, I guess there are people who just engage in titration and that's just all their work is, but that's.
Well, but even then, like it's like saying if we think of the more common version of practice, which often has to do with either sports or music or something like that, right?
Right.
It's like, well, doing scales or doing drills or whatever, like those are skills. Those are things that are intended to develop skills. But the purpose of it isn't to do that thing.
Yeah.
Like you don't practice scales to get good at scales. That's not the goal. You practice scales to get good at music, and music is not scales. And it isn't even really just memorizing music and playing it. It is a creative activity in the same way that sports is and in the same ways teaching practice is, right? Is that when you play music, especially if you're playing music in a group, you're responding to other musicians. Like the tempo, the arrangement, the structure of the music changes with different groups of people, as it should, in the same way that sports change. When you play different teams with different configurations of people on different days, those are different games. You're not just saying, oh, we can play that sport with a script. Like you run 10 yards ahead and then I'll run 15 yards ahead and then you pass me the ball. Like practice doesn't work that way.
Yeah. I'm getting a little, a little gun shy here because you're talking about practice from a musical standpoint. Cause I've been like taking lessons and, with my trumpet and working a ton on scales and things. And it's just like, it is so necessary, but it's so joyless. I mean, the joy comes from playing with other people, right? I am doing this so that I'm better at playing with other people. So I'm like, it's so deconstructed. It's like, so, isolating and but it's necessary. I mean, it's a necessary thing, but the thing that I'm trying to do is by doing that stuff, I want to get better at doing the practice, actual I'm practicing to practice.
Yeah. You're engaged in skill development, technique development to improve your practice, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so I think you might even think about practice not being that version of practice, is not the kind of practice we're talking about. We're not talking about practicing doing something over and over again to develop a technique, right? Because the technique is important, but the technique is important to help you be good at the practice. But the practice is the thing that matters.
We should have We should have a practice meter on this.
Oh, that's a
How
good
many
idea.
times or
Practice meter.
have we said practice in
Practice.
this
Practice.
episode? Yeah.
I mean,
Yeah, and if you keep saying it like that,
yeah.
it's
Well,
I
it's
can.
like, the same problem as phenomena, where you go do 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 at the end,
Oh.
which is, that's a Sesame Street thing, but oh boy.
I was at a session at a conference in the fall where I had to leave because the conference presenters asked us in mass every time that word was said to do
Do do do do do.
the phenomena
No,
do you know
no,
that thing. And
that's a.
I just was like, I can't do this.
I can't do
I
this.
have to leave.
We will not do this on this show. We will
No.
not. We will not say practice that way. But I think there's. This has been practice has been engaged with as a philosophical term and as an analytical term for a long time, right? And in education, probably one of the first places. I mean, there's communities of practice and Leven Wenger and their work.
Sure.
But there's also in that's in a similar vein to that is the Brown Collins and Do Good, and this is an article that we've talked about on this show as a kid,
Way back.
way back.
Yes.
But this idea of
Yes.
cognitive apprenticeship, because
Sure.
I think the reason it matters is because you talked about context a second ago,
Sure, here.
and I think context is another one of these words that I think doesn't get well understood. But I think one of the important things that doesn't get understood about that idea is context isn't just the physical environment in which you are when a thing is happening. It is also all of the
The people,
practices that are
right?
both embedded in that space and are being developed in that space when you're there. So that's why with cognitive apprenticeship, they talk about, well, if you're learning something, you have to learn it in the way that is related to the things that the people who know that stuff do that work. So all learning, all knowledge is contextual, which is to say embedded in social practice. It doesn't exist as a separate thing. And when you do that, when you take something out of its social context and try and make it a thing that stands on its own, you end up with really bad learning, which we've got a lot of examples of. But this sort of decontextualized, oh, we're going to learn Newton's second law is this. Newton, force equals mass times acceleration. Newton's first law is about inertia. But okay, so now I know these like decontextualized little tidbits that are of no use to me and are not. I don't know why they matter, what they matter for, how they can help me. There's no context.
Well, there could be a trivia, contest at the local pub, right? That you never know when you're going to be asked what Newton's third law is.
Yeah, that doesn't.
Doesn't convince you?
No. Does it
No.
convince you?
No, not at all.
I'm so
No.
glad. Show's over.
Done.
Ollie thinks trivia is a real social context.
It
I mean, it is a
is.
real social context, but
Sure, it is. I mean, I'm sure somebody's done some sort of research on that, right? Yeah.
yeah. Knowing the batting average of every Pittsburgh Pirate since 1974, like I guess there's a reason to know that, but
I appreciate that you brought the Pittsburgh Pirates into this
yeah,
conversation, but
I
don't know
threw you
that
a bone.
information.
No,
I don't know that information at all.
nor should you, nor should anybody, frankly.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that we come back to is where there are disciplines that do this better than science. And I keep
Yes.
coming back to, as I visualize
Well.
this, art does it better, I think, as because I don't think, I mean, they're engaged. If you go to art classes, they're engaged in the process of making art. If you go to music classes, they're engaged in the process of making music.
Sometimes, right? And I mean,
A
I don't
lot of,
know.
I would say in like, well, in a music class versus a band class, like if you're like in band or choir or, orchestra, those are the places where music is being made. You're engaging in the practice.
Yep.
If you go to a lot of art classes, a lot of art classes aren't like art history classes where they were talking about like specific artists. They're talking about like they're engaged in making art, right? Now, whether it's like art that they choose or whether it's art that is authentic or whether, I mean, I'm sure there's some
That's another
contextual.
piece of it,
Yeah,
yeah.
that's it. Like, I'm sure that, if we brought on, friend of the show, Leslie Gates, our art education person, she would say something along the lines about, you know, some of the critiques that's going on in her field with
Sure.
regard to the practice that's happening there. But I mean, that's so far removed from what we do in science. Like
Yeah.
we have to, you know, convince people that teaching the practice means engaging in the practice.
Yeah.
That's
Well, and
and
again,
how to engage in the practice.
right. And convince them that what they're doing now is not a pra well, it is a social practice. It's just not the social practice of science. It's the social practice of school science.
School, right.
Yeah. Or yeah, more accurately, school, which is it just happens to be science that they're schooling, but the practice is school, right? Which is to say, I give you information that you either write down or record in some other way, and then you give it back to me later, and I determine how well, with what degree of fidelity you have repeated the information I gave you.
Coming back to the word we can't
Fidelity, yeah.
fidelity from last episode.
Yep.
Yeah.
I used it intentionally because
I
it's
know,
not
all
a
eight episode.
oof. Yeah. So, but yeah,
Although
I mean, go ahead.
I would say like I since we recorded that episode last week, I probably have like a dozen more examples of
Oh,
things
I'm
that came
sure.
up. I was like, oh, I should have added that to the list. Oh, I
Yeah.
sh yeah.
Yeah, we could have another. Well, I mean, the scientific method could be one of those ones that's
Oh
in there,
my
right?
gosh,
I
yes.
mean, you still go into classrooms and see that poster on the wall. And I do think it is a struggle. I mean, I do understand people's frustration, right? With the whole idea of like, why is this a new thing? Like you're coming in saying we're doing these science and engineering practices. They look to me like it's the same old stuff, right? We're analyzing data. We're setting up experiments. We're doing math and we're drawing conclusions. Like, wow. I know you've got a little bit of different wording in there, but why is that? That seems like that's just a scientific method. And, you know, on some level, the answer is, yeah, you're right. 'Cause when Dewey tried to talk about the scientific method and he gets both credit and blame for characterizing it, right? Is he was trying, I don't know if he would have exactly put it this way, but he was trying to characterize a social practice in a way that was useful. He wasn't trying to turn science into a lockstep set of skills. He's a philosopher, right? Philosophers tend to think of these things in more nuanced ways that, and so he was trying to create the sense that science shouldn't be just this body of knowledge that we memorize. It should be this practice that we engage in, but it got sort of, as so many things do in education in particular, turned into this hammer that everybody went around with and said, well, this is the truth and this is the way it always is, and it is always done in this way.
Now, I don't know if we talked about this before, but way back, I was involved in something on campus that was talking about like teaching writing. Have we talked about this before?
Maybe.
And how, you know, there's the algorithm form of writing, right? Where it's like it's that what you say. It is the lockstep. Hey, you have an introduction, you have three paragraphs, you have a conclusion, you have an essay.
Yep,
That is the
there it is.
algorithm for, you know,
The five
and
paragraph essay. There it is.
but which is, you
Master.
know, clearly the best way
Right.
to write. But then I, you know, I had, and I'm sarcasm right there
Yep.
for all of you who may not know, but I have folks on campus, lots of folks, lots of colleagues who believe that's a heuristic,
Yes.
that what a heuristic is it's just general guidance. It's talking about it's a practice, you
Yeah.
know. It and I think that is what is a way to frame this argument, right? This
Yeah.
scientific method and skill versus a practice. You know, the skills and the scientific method is an algorithmic way of thinking, is that it is a lockstep where in order to move to this heuristic approach, a broader lens, one that involves the context and the environment and the people and the phenomenon and all the other things that are that milieu of that environment. And I just did the milieu.
Yeah, you did. You
I
did,
did.
Malou.
But all of that informs the specific practice, the specific skills, and all of that.
And you could, I mean, you could even argue that a heuristic is more structured than what we're talking about with
Oh,
practice,
sure.
but it's a continuum, right?
Right.
But
It's closer. It's
it's
closer.
definitely closer because it doesn't, it's not a lockstep-y sort of you do this, you do this, you do this. It's more guidance that helps you think about it and what are important pieces. But you know, it also reminds me, you know, I remember having these conversations, particularly in biology. I don't know why I beat up on biology, but sorry if you're a biology person. It may be a natural thing that physicists do, but talk about mitosis and meiosis, right? These biological processes of cell division. And one of the things I say about that is like those phases don't exist. Like cells divide, that's a real phenomenon. You start with one cell, it turns into two cells. That is a process, but the steps that we've turned it into were steps that we designed to be analytically useful for us as humans, but they're not, they don't exist in nature in that sense. Like you can say what we arbitrarily are going to call the different phases, but when you look at it, it's a seamless process. You can't say like one starts and ends in that in a clear way, right? It's sort of like the when Zen meditating people talk about like when does your inhale end and your exhale begin and vice versa, like it's very difficult. It's not like it's some spot. It's a process, right? And so this when you break things into these steps, they're useful analytically, but then if you forget what they are doing is trying to describe a complex process where these things are happening often simultaneously, like data analysis and explanation building happen simultaneously. Asking questions and doing explanations often happen simultaneously. So this idea that like you do this thing and then you do that thing and then you do this thing, it does damage to our ability to actually participate in real processes if we think that it's that lockstep-y.
It sounds to me like you're against buckets.
Oh yes. I am both against buckets and against lists. And I am particularly against lists of buckets or buckets of lists. I do not like those, Sam. I am.
Because this, I mean, that's really what this is, right? It's that this is going into the mitosis bucket. This is going into the meiosis bucket, right? And those are, and it's,
Anaphase, anaphylaxis phase. I don't
right?
remember any of the phases. They're like
Yeah, you're
anaphylaxis phase was, I've been sarcastic there too, just to be
right.
clear. That's not a real phase.
And even with the scientific method, it's a list or buckets of procedures, right? When this thing is much more fluid and ill-defined, right? And gray.
And this is and fundamentally this is, you know, the you know, like one of the big debates that's happening right now, and this may put us in a period of time as well, though I think this is one of those ongoing debates, is the science of reading debate, right? So you're hearing a lot right now,
Yes.
especially in Pennsylvania, because they just required that it be part of our certification process, that there is a science of reading. Now I have all sorts of problems with that. First of all, just they're just putting science sauce on stuff, and then that makes it sound more legitimate, right? It's like, oh, well, this is the science of reading. It's not that other kind of research about reading.
Right.
It's the science of reading because this one is linked to test scores or whatever it's linked to. It's linked to making really small buckets that are easy to measure so that we can count them and then tell people that things are changing in ways that are important when really not so much. But we're in this place right now where the science of reading is having a big rebound, and there's a lot of push to do essentially phonics-based, you know, decoding, deconstruction of language for the purpose of understanding words out of context mostly, and then understanding language as a sort of ritualized call and response process as opposed to an organic interaction between human beings. So I think this push towards that is really, and I'm not saying there shouldn't be part of that in how we learn, because I think they're just like the buckets have a value. The problem is when you start thinking the buckets are the thing, like this is another trope on our show, right? Is when you confuse the analytical framework for the thing you're trying to understand, then you're lost. Then you have a problem because now you think you have a correct answer that accurately depicts this complex phenomenon you're trying to characterize, when in fact you don't. You just have an arbitrary process of steps that you've developed that helps you understand something a little better. That doesn't mean it's true for everybody in all cases in all worlds.
Yeah, there's a lot there. I have engaged in the science of agreeing. I'll say this.
Yeah.
I have engaged in it, but I have a lot of colleagues who are much closer to this that I rely on because
me too.
They are literacy experts who know this stuff much more than I will ever know it. And and I would say while they are engaging in the work of, revising the competencies and revising the curriculum on campus in response to the competencies for science of reading, most of them are doing it being
begrudgingly,
dragged, begrudgingly, they're being dragged to implement this. I mean, I think it's a way of helping people learn, but it's not the only way of helping people learn.
No.
Right?
Well, and again, it reduces what it means to read to a very narrow definition, which I think for most of my colleagues, and I'm guessing for most of your colleagues who are literacy people, mostly denudes it of any of the joy that both reading and speaking bring to normal human beings. Like, it's like, it's like making language into math problems where it's like, okay, here's how you solve this math problem. You do this and then you do that. And I'm not saying mathematicians like that either. Just to be clear. But it's just, like reading Harry Potter or pick your whatever favorite book or, thing that you love about reading is not based on decoding the words. Decoding the words is a necessary skill to be able to participate in the reading, but that's not, again, it's not what the reading is about. It's not about, it's the practice of reading. And the practice of reading also isn't just the reading, it's the reading and the talking to others about it and the and all of the social practices that surround reading that are not about decoding and analysis, that are about participation in a community.
Yeah. So what else? What else do we want to tackle today before we move to Joyce?
I think that's okay. I mean, I just wanted to really try and, we talk about practice a lot, but I really wanted to say,
differentiate.
It's such a central idea of the way that we think about learning writ large, but specifically the changes that have happened in science and science teaching and learning over the last, I mean, realistically 20 years, but particularly in the last 10 or so, 10 to 15. But it also scales out to almost, like we were saying, we were talking about reading, we were talking about art, we were talking about math. Whenever you take a complex social practice and reduce it to a bunch of rules, you've done damage both to the practice and its authentic nature, and also to people's ability to enjoy and care about that social practice, right? Like part of the reason that there's a whole raft of people who don't think of themselves as science people or math people is because of the way, and for that matter, in some cases, people who can read or who are good at English
or math, like, or anything,
any discipline, is the way that we have constructed how we teach that to be about, not about the larger, more complex, dynamic living social practice, but about the breaking down into tiny little bits of that social practice into learnable nuggets that don't mean anything. And so now you've learned a bunch of nuggets that don't mean anything, and you're surprised when people don't think it means anything.
Done. Period.
Done. Stick a fork in that. We are done.
Yes. All right. Joyce, do you have a joy?
I have a joy. I can go first this time.
Go ahead.
We haven't done a, I don't know if you have, but I can't remember the last time one of us recommended a podcast. So I'm going to recommend a
Oh,
podcast,
that's great.
which we have not done in a while. So, for those of you who are old school podcast people, you may remember Gimlet Media, which there's a whole story behind Gimlet Media, which we're not going to go into. But this is not about Gimlet Media. This is about a guy who is on a show that used to be on Gimlet Media. And his name is PJ Vogt, and I'm a fan of PJ's work when he was at Gimlet. He did a oh my gosh, what was the name of his show? I'll think of it. But anyway, he has since gone off on his own with Shruti. I'm forgetting Shruti's last name, but they were working together at Gimlet, and they spun off into their own show, and it's called Search Engine. And it's got a lot of the same. It's a very Gimlety sounding show, and it's a very PJ Vogt sounding show. But I like him a lot, and he the premise of the show is they ask a question, no question too big, no question too small, and they try to answer it. And there are some fascinating ones. There's a really what got me into it was a two-part series that is about ADD and ADHD and the relationship between that diagnosis and the medications associated with it, which are mostly basically speed or speed derivative type things, things that are uppers. But he's done really interesting shows about like why are there so many chicken bones on the street? That was a fascinating one. There was one about why would drug dealers put fentanyl into other drugs, and they're really no question too big, no question too small, and they're very produced, polished podcast. But it's fun and good and interesting and well done. So I
I'll have to
recommend
check that
Search
out.
Engine.
I feel like I'm kind of in a podcast rut. I kind
I
of feel like
was too.
listening to the same things, and most of it is joyful, but some of it is also becoming a little like work, right? And I hope maybe somebody's feeling like that about our podcast.
Let's not talk about that on this show.
All right, but I'll check that out. Okay, so I got a good joy. Well,
Good
I mean,
joy.
they're joys.
They're all good joys.
So, there's a Netflix series called One Day.
I've not heard of
So,
this one day.
One Day. So, it's based on a book that I haven't read, called One Day, that was out by
Clever, clever. I like this.
David Nichols. I guess it's a beloved book that's been out for a while, and it was turned into a movie. I don't know. Bunch of years ago with Anne Hathaway, but I guess it was kind of panned by the people who loved the book because it just kind of pulled some of the spirit. And this is a 14-part series that my wife and
14.
I watched in 3 days.
Wow.
Now, some of the episodes are short; they're like 20, 25 minutes. But so it follows one day every year or a bunch of years through a bunch of years. So it's every July 15th, which is, I guess, Saint Smithin's Day in England. I don't know.
That
It's
sounds
kind
made
of,
up.
I
Saint.
don't know. It's it sounds a little like, Groundhog Day. Like this is a day that if it rains on this day, then it rains for the rest of summer or something like that. But so it's this day, these two characters meet, Emma and Dexter, and they just meet on their like graduation day, right? The last day of their
Graduation
school.
from college?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
And so it follows them over the next 20 years of them falling in and out of friendship and through their, careers and their loves. And, it
Nice.
is them. Okay. So first off, the characters are awesome. The actual actors are awesome. The one guy, the only, like, I actually didn't know this until. Did you watch White Lotus? Okay, so Dexter is played by Leo Woodall, who I think is the one guy that the kid in the second episode, I mean the second season, who's
Oh, I haven't seen the
like,
second season. Okay.
okay, well then, all right, then
It won't help
I won't
me.
give I won't it won't help you. But anyway, they're like a bunch of people that you really don't recognize. They're not people that, but they're so well cast and they're so like you really like them, despite them making sometimes bad choices and all that. And the music is great because it's set in like the 80s and 90s, and the music is so great. Like, it is like having lived through that, I was just like, and it, what's really nice is that they have the music, they have a lot of like the scenes, but they don't like do the dress or the hair a lot. So you,
okay.
It still feels timeless.
Yeah.
Right.
It doesn't
Except
feel
for,
like forced into an era.
No. And it doesn't feel like they're trying too hard to be like, oh, this, hey, this is set in 1987. We should just like really 1987
right.
and up, which
Yeah.
Nobody wants to go back to that. Right. Nobody does.
No.
Having lived through it, I don't want to go back
No.
through it,
No.
But it's like subtle. You see it with the cars and maybe some of the clothes, but it's all subtle.
Yeah.
It is great. We finished it last night. I just loved it. I adored it. At the end, I was emotionally spent because it covered a lot of territory. And you're
Yeah.
just—I mean—you're pulling for these folks to,
Yeah.
to make it because there's like, yeah, because
Yeah.
they're, yeah.
Yeah.
So check it out. It is definitely a joy. One day, I'm probably going to read the book because I just enjoyed it so much. But yeah. So good.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How I fell into it was we were watching Graham Norton. I don't know if you know that show, but the Graham Norton show, and
Oh, yes.
the actress, and her name is Ambika Maud. She was on and she was like so funny and so nice. And I'm like, we've got to check out this show. And we watched the first episode and we're just like, okay, how about another? And then we
Yeah.
watched like half of it in one night. It was great. Check it out.
All right.
One day,
Will do.
Netflix. Yeah. All right.
All right. Well, there we have it.
There we got it.
Some practice, some joy.
Yeah. Practice and joy.
Practicing joy.
Absolutely. Just
Yeah.
like that.
We do it all here.
Yeah. And we'll catch you next time.
In between.
See you then.
Bye now.